Hi, it's Brandy Taylor. Welcome to the Business Beauty Network podcast, where business meets beauty. It's not just lipstick, it's business. We will share thought-provoking conversations with business and beauty professionals. Our goal is to empower, motivate, and inspire you to take your business to the next level.
Imagine a world where your beauty business grows effortlessly while enjoying more personal time. Introducing StyleSeed, the ultimate salon management platform designed just for you. Building your beauty empire has never been smoother. StyleSeed handles the nitty-gritty details like booking management and building powerful business tools so that you can focus on what you do best. Try StyleSeed today and enjoy $30 off of your first 3 months of the premium plan. Get this limited time offer with our link in the show notes. Join StyleSeed today, trusted by top professionals and adorned by clients. Welcome to the podcast. A new day, a new week, and a new episode of the Business Beauty Network podcast. Welcome, welcome. I am super, super excited to bring a new episode to you today. But before we get into that, make sure that you are subscribed to the Business Beauty Network podcast wherever you're listening. It's totally free, so just hit follow or subscribe and connect with us. And also, don't forget to share it out. If you know someone who would benefit from this awesome content, share it out. Let them know. Spread the love. We truly appreciate that. Leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps other people to find us. So if you love something about one of these episodes that you hear, leave us a 5-star review there. Also, let us know what you're thinking of the episodes with Mariah Hedquist. I want to hear from you about her episodes, so let me know what you think there. You can leave all the reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can connect with us at hello@businessbeautynetwork.com. Our website is businessbeautynetwork.com. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook at Business Beauty Network. Connect with me at I Am Brandy Taylor. Brandy is with an I. But now that all of that is out of the way, I am super, super excited. The weather is warming up. I'm ready for the sundress season and all of these awesome things. I'm just ready for some warm weather because I think this past year we had a terrible winter and I'm just ready for it. So I'm here for the warm weather and this is a busy season. I'm super excited. I'm gearing up for our brunch, the Beauty Biz Brunch, which is going to take place on May 19th. And we're celebrating 5 years of the Business Beauty Network podcast. And if you cannot make it out to the brunch, make sure that you check out our podcast website at businessbeautynetwork.com and you can donate right there. We're going on tour, we're upgrading some equipment and going to be marketing more and getting the word out there more, connected with more of beauty industry professionals. And we need your support. So any support is greatly appreciated. And you can do that at businessbeautynetwork.com. And we really, truly appreciate you there. But I'm excited about the brunch. The first time I did the brunch, I had been doing like expos and huge events for a while with a lot of vendors at big, huge venues. But it was something about the brunch that was very intimate and it just was different. It hit differently, right? And everybody still asks me often that attended that brunch, like, are you going to do the brunch again? So I'm super excited that we're 5 years into the Business Beauty Network podcast and we're finally doing the Beauty Biz brunch again. And we're celebrating, we're networking, we're shopping, we're going to have food and so much fun. So if you can make it out to the Metro Detroit area, we would gladly have you there. But if not, donate on the website, connect with us there. That's going to really help to keep us going with all of our initiatives and things that we're doing for the beauty community over here at Business Beauty Network. But I'm super excited about that. And that's what I've been working on. But now let's get into today's episode. Megan Cox is the dynamic founder of Genie Supply, based in Bedford, Indiana, an MIT alumni with a background in chemistry and business. Megan launched her own cosmetic brand, Wink, in 2013 after discovering a novel chemical solution to her own beauty problems of thinning lashes. Drawing from her global manufacturing experience, including hands-on problem solving in China, she established Genie Supply, a beauty lab for entrepreneurs like herself. In 2018, under her leadership, this beauty lab has since empowered over 400 beauty brands through their development and launch, champion clean beauty, and fostering entrepreneurial success along the way. I think you're really going to enjoy this interview and your helps. Hey, hey, it's your host, Brandy Taylor, and we have an awesome guest today, Megan Cox. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me on today.
Awesome, Megan. I'm super excited to have you on today. Before we learn more about you and all the awesome things you're doing with your business, tell us something about yourself that most people would not know.
Would not know. Okay. I spent my weekend doing about two activities and two activities only. One is called fuel dumping, and the other one was knitting. So those two things probably don't really coincide very often. And fuel dumping, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's basically where you're looking for kind of like holes in the pricing algorithm for flights so you can find flights without paying for the fuel surcharge. So you could go around the world for like $300.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I need to learn how to do that, Megan.
Right. A lot more work than it's worth, I would say, but it's interesting for me.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that, like, I can't say I haven't had anyone on who does that. So is that something you do on your own, or is that a part of your business, or what?
Yeah, totally unrelated to what we do here at Genie Supply. I think it just kind of itches a scratch in my brain in terms of optimization. It's like my degree is in operations research, which is a type of optimization. And I just find it really fun to find holes in other people's systems and exploit them. It's just one type of problem to solve.
Awesome. Well, that is definitely interesting, Megan. Thanks for sharing that. So tell us your journey. Like, how did you start your business? What sparked you to decide you wanted to become an entrepreneur?
I started my first business out of my dorm room when I was in college, and I really didn't think that entrepreneurship was for me. I saw it as this very salesy type of thing. It just didn't seem interesting. And then the more I reflected on it, the more I realized that I'd spent my whole life building and selling things. So I was like, oh, this is actually a natural fit. At that time, I had created a serum, like an eyelash serum, to help me regrow my eyelashes that I had lost. And after testing that on a group of 10 friends, like the rest of the cheer squad, and taking measurements, I was like, oh, this actually works. So I got together all the money that I had and decided to go through my first manufacturing run and launch my brand. So that's really where my journey started about 10 years ago now, maybe 11 years ago.
Oh, wow. I love that story, Megan, how you got together your friends, and those were the people like on the cheer team.
Yeah.
And those were the people that tested out the products. Like, kind of take us through that process.
So after practice, I had the whole squad come over to my dorm, and we did photos. Like, I just had another friend take photos for us, and then measurements. One was the length of everyone's eyelashes, and the other was the number. So we counted like how many actual eyelashes they had. And then we met every 2 weeks and recorded all of the data. So at the end, I could determine whether or not I really had a product that could work and you know, ostensibly work for a range of people. And it was kind of cool having the cheer team because there were guys and girls and all different ethnicities. And not a lot of cosmetic testing panels I've learned actually have any type of diversity. So I think we did a good thing.
Yeah, sounds like it. So after you've collected all this data, how did you go about developing the product and getting it on the market?
That was the formulation was ready at that point, and we put it through like our own type of pseudo clinical testing. And then I had to find a packaging manufacturer and start to sort through all those steps. Like, I didn't really know how the product will be housed, so I had to sort through the options, talk to manufacturers, see who was willing to work with me. And I threw up a Shopify site, which this had to be the first, second, maybe third year that Shopify existed, so early. And just kind of figured out the pieces as I went. You know, the first couple weeks, I only had a few sales, but I also was reaching out to news outlets to let them know that I was launching my product and we'd had these great results. And the first newspaper that picked it up then got picked up by the state newspaper. So I sold out overnight. It was really an incredible first journey.
Awesome. So How did you expand from there? Did you add any more products on after the eyelash serum? What other products did you come up with?
For the first 2 years, I didn't launch anything else. I think there's so much to learn about running an e-commerce company, and there was so much less information online at that time about how to do this successfully that I really spent those first 2 years sussing everything out, figuring out, like, what do I not know? What do I need to learn? And then around the 2 year point, I surveyed all of my customers to find out what problems they were facing that they couldn't find products on the market for. And we started developing from there. So eventually, when I sold my brand, I think we had 6 formulations and maybe 2 more that were in the works. But still, the majority of my sales came from my initial product, which was called Blink, even at the time that I sold the brand.
Okay. You said it was called Blink?
Wink.
Wink. Okay. Wink. Okay. Was Wink ever in Ulta or at all or Sephora?
So it was an organic lash serum. And very like small batch beauty type of thing. Our target customer demographic was actually between 60 and 80. So we didn't quite have the same demographic of Ulta or Sephora or even of the other lash serums like Grande Lash. So I think we did well within the customer base that we have, but they're not shopping at Sephora.
Awesome. Awesome. So you had 6 formulations when you ended up selling your company. Take us through the journey, because I know now you're helping other people get into the industry that want to formulate their own products or want a private label and things of that nature. So how did, like, kind of fast forward, how did we get here?
It seems like a very big leap, doesn't it? During the first or second year of running my brand, I was having a lot of issues with the packaging, the consistency of it, just like breaking down on people because we had these click pins. Actually, I have one because I think we were just going through some boxes, but the pin part was failing for people and it was pretty pricey. So they felt like they were losing a lot of product. They're pretty dissatisfied. I couldn't figure out how I could resolve this issue remotely, like from my apartment in Boston. I couldn't figure this out. So I did go to China and I just went to the factories and tested samples there and set up quality control protocols with the factories and then went there in person and checked the goods before we shipped them out to our contract filler in the United States. So during that time, I think Shopify might have come out with a story about what I was doing and there were some other articles as well. So other entrepreneurs are reaching out to me and asking me, hey, can you help us find packaging? Can you go to our factory and check our goods? And I started taking on the side work that really was more interesting to me than making emails and marketing campaigns and just selling this product I'd already developed years earlier. So I stayed in China for a few years doing these type of side projects. And throughout the side projects, I realized that the quality control was not very consistent and the formulation quality was not very consistent on small batch beauty. So anything under 5,000 pieces. And my husband gave me the nudge. He's like, you can do it better than any of these labs that we've been to. Like you should just open your own. So eventually he talked me into it and we moved back to the States and opened our own lab. And now we help beauty entrepreneurs start their own lines.
Awesome. Was that scary at first? I know it had to be, right?
When he told me his idea the first time, I was like, please stop talking. Like, I don't even want to hear this idea all the way out because you're going to plant a seed and I'm not sure that I'm ready to go on that journey. And anyway, he did plant a seed. So after several months of thinking it through, I was like, you're right. Like, we could actually do this. And we only started with one product, just with lip gloss in the beginning. And then we expanded out through color, cosmetics, skincare, personal care. We do so much now, but I have a full team. In the beginning, it was just me and him, and we had like 2 or 3 people on the team initially, very, very small.
Awesome. Awesome. So, like, take us through the journey of building up the brand to where you're helping other entrepreneurs start their brands, get their manufacture their products and all those things. Take us through the process of that. I know he gave you the idea and now you move back to the US, but how do you get the word out there? How do you start working with more entrepreneurs?
Primarily the same way that we get the word out there is the same way I got the word out there when I had my own brand. For the first few years since I was figuring out what I didn't know. You know, sometimes you'll see that matrix of like things you know and things you don't know, like known knowns, unknown unknowns, etc. Yeah, I didn't realize yet how much I didn't know. So we took it very, very slow. And all I did was write blogs on our website about the few things I didn't know. And as we tested things and grew and expanded from there, we kept writing. So most of our clients, honestly, about 80% of people that find us just find our website, find our blog, maybe our social media, and they come in that way. And then now the part of our business that's referrals from other clients is growing pretty quickly as well. So I think that having my own story out there, knowing that I went through all of these issues and really building our website as a knowledge base for entrepreneurs where they can learn about building their own beauty brand, no matter what stage they're at, has really helped draw in those entrepreneurs who are making products at home right now and want to move to the lab, or perhaps have an idea, but they just don't know how to turn it into a product yet.
I think that's awesome. You know, having a blog, because I think that's the first thing people do is like research. Like, okay, I want to start this skincare brand. What is the first thing I should do? And if I am already formulating a product in my kitchen, you know, how do I go to getting it formulated on a commercial basis? You know, like I've heard people having commercial kitchens or outsourcing. Like, how does that work for you when a brand is looking to start?
When they're already making their own formula at home. Yeah. That's a tough process. I think the first thing is that they're giving up some control, right, to be able to move it over to you. But what we have them do is take their formulation and weigh out all of the ingredients so that we can, you know, figure out the weights of everything they're putting in, from there, figure out the ratios by weight and write down the whole process of making their product. Because when they bring that to us, we're going to want to replicate it first. And we're going to send them a sample and make sure that we're replicating it just the way they made it at home. A lot of people find this part challenging because they're like, oh, I just wing it. You know, it's just about the feeling. But when you're going to mass manufacturing, there can't be feelings involved. It has to strictly be numbers, right? We have to know exactly what the ingredient is, the genus, the inky, how it's processed. And then we have to have everything by weight instructions so that we can have consistent batches. And then once we've replicated it with them, we'll tell them what testing they should have in order to manufacture that product safely, replicably, make sure it's safe for consumers, but that it has a shelf life that we can rely on, and we know what that shelf life is. And once that testing is complete, then we can go through manufacturing. There's lots of like small points at which people fall off in this process. And I understand because I went through the process myself, right? From tinkering around at home to moving it to a lab, and then effectively, I didn't touch the formulation again after that through the whole life of my company. There's different points that are very challenging. I think it's, you know, giving up control, deciding to do something different than what you're doing now, like moving away from the status quo is always the most difficult thing. Getting the formulation standardized, committing to testing it, and then committing to the investment that it takes to contract manufacture. Because I talk about this all the time, but when you're making a product at home, you're very likely to calculate your cost as just the things that you're buying and not actually all the time and effort you're putting into it. And so here in our facility, we pay everyone that works for us, right? We pay their salary, pay for their health insurance. You know, there's a lot involved. And so those costs will come through in your per unit cost. So it's a challenging move, but we've had a lot of very successful clients make that move.
Just say it's easier to private label, or like, what are the differences?
So private labeling is when we've already developed a formulation and then we're just going to replicate it for the client, and they can use packaging we have or bring their own, but the packaging has their branding on it. Private labeling has a pretty low upfront investment, so it could be a great option. But I found that over the years, the popularity of private label has been waning because people want something differentiated. Even if it's just in their heart, they know that their formulation is different in some way than the base formula. They want something different. So yeah, it definitely has a lower investment cost up front, but I'm not sure it's the best option or the number one option for beginners in this day and age.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Do you talk to a lot of private label companies?
Pardon me?
Do you talk to a lot of private label companies?
No, in the past I have, and I've had discussions about it. I was just, you know, interested in How does it work? How is it going now with that? Is that something that people are still interested in doing if you wanted to start a product? Because I know like in 2020, everybody was starting their own skincare line. You know, everybody wanted to drop a product at that particular time. And a lot of people were private labeling and different things of that nature. So that's why I was just trying to get clarity on it.
Yeah, I think it's become a little bit less popular over time. Now a lot of labs, and our lab included, we allow clients to customize the formulas to, you know, make it their own or implement some kind of like golden thread, something throughout their brand that remains constant. But it does make it challenging for us because essentially we are manufacturing an infinite number of SKUs at any given time.
Yes, yes. I can see that for sure. So what, I know you said now you help with a variety of different products. You start off with lip gloss, but now you help with a variety of different products. What type of products do you help develop with your company?
I think you'd be surprised, especially because our digital footprint is so lip gloss and lipstick focused, but we offer all types of body care, skincare, serums, moisturizers, cleansers. And we really don't do that much color work anymore. Color work's really challenging. Yeah, we do make a lot of lip gloss behind the scenes, but other types of color work like foundation, concealers, we do a little bit of that work, but it's very capital intensive and very time consuming on our end.
Oh, yeah, like if someone wanted to develop a concealer or a foundation or something like that, it's a little bit of a harder process and more costly, you're saying?
When you think about like how many shades does Fenty have?
Like 50? Yeah, like 50 shades.
When you think about how many shades are in her line and why it took so long for that to happen, it's not necessarily just because no one wanted to do it. It's because it requires an insane amount of money to do it. Right? Like each one of those shades, you want to get right and make sure that you're covering a demographic that's going to be serviceable by that shade, and it takes a lot of lab work and there's going to be very high minimums. So let's say you have 60 shades per product. You might need to run at least 10,000 pieces per shade. So you might be talking about like 600,000 pieces just to get started on something. And unless you're a billionaire with a B like Rihanna, I don't know how you're going to afford it. So sometimes when you find those fun little innovation spots, you're like, there's a reason it took this long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting for sure. Now, what about lipstick? Is it still a big thing? Lipstick and lip gloss, you would say, are those something that people are still developing? I feel like there's always a new lip product coming out for sure.
The reason you'll see a lot of lip products now, with lip products really came back with a vengeance after COVID. We were masked up for so long. I think people were like, okay, I'm ready, right? I'm ready to pop off again. So they want some bright colors and shimmer. But I do think the reason you see so many lip gloss and lip oil companies, especially on TikTok, is because those are products that you can make at home relatively easily without major concerns for contamination. So you could whip up some lip gloss. There's no water in it, so you're not going to have any bacteria in there. And then you fill it into little containers. It's low investment. You can get creative with it. You don't really have to worry about health and safety that much. So I feel like that's why we're seeing a lot of it right now. And when those brands do get larger and they're ready, you see some really big numbers on TikTok. Then we're the type of lab that they call to move things over so that they can take all of that lip gloss batching off of their hands.
Business Beauty Network presents the Beauty Biz Brunch. Join us for a morning of beauty, business, and brunch at the Taylor Garden event venue in Livonia, Michigan on May 19th at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event is perfect for beauty enthusiasts, hairstylists, estheticians, makeup artists, salon and spa owners, anyone passionate about the beauty industry. You can network with like-minded individuals, learn from industry experts, and enjoy a brunch spread from Motor City Grits. Whether you want to expand your business or connect with others in the beauty world, this event is for you. Don't miss the fabulous opportunity to mix and mingle with fellow beauty professionals. Mark your calendars and prepare for a morning of beauty and business with the Beauty Biz Brunch. This also celebrates 5 years of the Business Beauty Network podcast And in celebration, we're going to be fundraising as well. But this is a fun-filled event. We're going to have vendors full of shopping, education, so much fun. We hope to see you there. To find out more information about the Beauty Biz Brunch, check out our website at businessbeautynetwork.com/events. That's businessbeautynetwork.com/events. All of the information will also be in the show notes. Yeah, lip oils is definitely a big thing, and balms as well. Like, I don't know. I think the Dior lip oil went, like, for the past few years, everybody's been going crazy over that. And then the younger generation with the Summer Fridays lip balm, it's like, what is going on with the lips these days?
I know. Have you tried them?
I have. And it's a good lip balm, but I don't understand that, you know,
I don't know if it deserves the Holy Grail status from it.
Right. I don't know if it deserves that. It's a good lip balm, but it's like, wow, is it that serious? But for some reason, the younger generation loves it. But I was just thinking about that when we were talking about, you know, glosses and lip oils and stuff of that nature. Yeah. So what advice would you give someone who always wanted to start their own line and maybe they don't, you know, they haven't been able to make a product themselves, but they're looking to start off small. Maybe they want to start a new lipstick or something like that. What advice would you give them, like, right now in this day and age?
I think for entrepreneurs in general, I don't know if I should really be speaking on behalf of my lab at this point, but for entrepreneurs in general, it's really important to make small bets, like to just make the smallest minimum viable business product possible and try it out and then see how it goes and get customer feedback and keep moving from there. And first of all, be ready for failure. Failure is inevitable, but failure gives you the proper data so that you can pivot to where you need to be. But I would say start as small as possible. And if you are bent on doing this at home, like you definitely are going to do this at home, choose something that doesn't contain water. I've seen so many irresponsible things happening on the internet, and you should not be manufacturing products with water at home. I don't think so. It's putting everyone at risk. So something that's anhydrous, like a lip gloss or a lip oil or a lip balm, those are good things to start with. And then you'd be surprised. You really have to scale quite a bit before you can make that move to a lab. But just try to be, like, methodical about collecting data and getting feedback and improving as you go. And I think customers will respond really well to that.
Awesome. And what other ways does your company help people when they're starting off with their companies and their brands and everything? And what other ways, in addition to, you know, manufacturing a product and all those things, what are some other ways that you help?
Right. When we were setting up our services, we tried to do everything from a founder first perspective. So one of the problems I saw when I started was that so many entrepreneurs did not own their formulas because they had never even thought to have that conversation with their lab. And so when things went sour with their lab, whether the product was not being delivered on time or, like, they couldn't get quotes, they couldn't get pricing, their lab was ghosting them, there's nothing they can do. They're stuck at that point. They don't own their formula, right? So for our formulating process, like, we are very, very transparent about ownership since we know it's so important and include that in the process. Some of the other services that we included, we offer custom coloring of packaging and no MOQ screen printing, hot foil stamping, just things that are really hard to find in the U.S. that I personally couldn't find. Even if you want custom colored packaging, normally it's like 10,000 pieces, right? It's very, very hard to find something. So we offer solutions so that you can get your packaging, your brand, and your formula all how you want them so that you're ready to launch. So I think it's, like, just one of our main focuses is always finding what is not available on the market and what brand founders are specifically looking for, and then trying to offer those services and in a reasonable way that we can to meet their needs.
Now, when you're starting out with a brand, what are some of the best ways to market it and get it out there?
That's such a tough question, but I think authenticity is very important, just like being real with your customers and showing your journey. I think we've seen the power of that on social media over the past few years. Customers love the behind the scenes. They love to know the story, the why, or if, and it could be, you know, a heartfelt story, or it could be that you had a problem and you really needed a solution to the problem. So you developed this thing, but that's the best way to get your message out and the cheapest way to get your message out. Otherwise, you spend a lot of money on advertising. So the more you can really tap into your story and your authenticity, I think the better that you'll do.
Yeah, I think that's great. I've heard too, like building a community too. And I think that's what you did in the beginning, because you used people you were in college with. So they, you know, they knew you and they tried the products and they went through the journey with you. And I think that makes it easier when you do that to get the word out, because you have a community behind you.
Yeah. And I think the community can also be strangers. Like sometimes you find that if you're asking your family and friends to support you, they might not vibe with everything that you're doing. But if you find the people whose needs you're really meeting online, like they'll be your number one supporters. Even with my first business with Wink, I had just such a really strong core group of customers that was ready to offer feedback, very, very supportive. And that was immensely helpful in my journey.
Yes, I could see that for sure. Because I know starting out, when you don't really have a customer yet, sometimes you may have an idea of who you think your product is for. But as you grow and go along in your business, things may kind of switch a little bit. And so having that, I think it really help you narrow it down and get an understanding of, you know, how it's performing for other people and who is attracting and all those things. Having that community can help you with that.
Yeah, my travel persona before I started my brand was very, very different than the people who ended up buying my products. Like sometimes you'll be surprised.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that a lot. Yeah, so in the beginning, sometimes you may not have the ideal client, you know, right, or have it yet. But as you know, you have the product, you put it out on the market, you may start to notice your ideal client is not who you thought it was. So you need to start marketing a little different. And that's a part of the journey for sure, and starting your own brand.
And it also means sometimes learning a new language. Like, oh my God, like now that I have this different customer persona, like how do I communicate with them? So that was the learning journey for me as well.
Yeah, because you told me you target an older generation. But I'm pretty sure you didn't start it off, because you started off with your college friends, right? So how did you end up, to kind of tell us about that. How did you end up discovering that it was more so the older women that was into your product?
I thought that my target consumer would be people who got lash extensions very frequently like I did, or had trichotillomania where they pull out their lashes, or maybe they had overplucked their eyebrows, you know, in the early 2000s. So I thought that the target persona would be someone like me. And a lot of people fall into that trap where they think that their customer is going to be people just like them. Like, oh, it's my problem, so the customer is going to look like me. Well, it's not really true. I found that people who had gone through chemotherapy lost their eyelashes and eyebrows. So for them, it was like very high up on their list of problems that they wanted to solve. It was a very pressing need for them. And also women generally who I think had gone through menopause lost some eyelashes, some brows, some volume there. And so for them, it was a restorative process. Whereas I was thinking that my customer base would just be people who wanted to look better, you know, like, okay, we're looking good. We are focusing on our looks and we just want to look better. And that it just wasn't true. I really only found out from emailing and calling and talking to these customers, because in the beginning I was just like really deep in it, like, oh, how did you hear about us, like tell me why you chose our product and how's it working for you. So I had a very close relationship with my customers. I'd meet with some of them in person. I even like flew to one customer's house one time. So I really went above and beyond in a lot of scenarios to figure out who that group was, and then had to figure out what they like to hear. And so figuring out the process of like what they like to hear and how they like to hear about the marketing of this product without making them feel like reaching those people without making them feel shame about the problems they're experiencing was a journey. But I think that I really just used like the data, like from MailChimp, like seeing like what they clicked on and what they're reading and what they're spending time on. And that helped me like pivot and adjust.
That's sharing it, because I'm sure like there's people out there who maybe have gone through that or are going through that process of really trying to narrow down who their client is, or maybe are in that phase where you were and kind of discovered it's not exactly who I thought it was. So now let me kind of change my message to target this audience. And really, like you said, really trying to get the message right so it's attracting more of your ideal client, for sure.
If there were shipping delays or any kind of problem, I would be the one to call the customer and make sure. So I really went above and beyond with customer service. And I think that let me get in with the customers without them feeling like, I bought a product from you, why are you bothering me, right? Like, I could also solve a problem for them and be like, how's your day going? Like, thank you so much. Like, I saw this is your third order or whatever. So it can be really effective to just call up those customers or talk to those customers, but sometimes you have to find a way to do it without annoying them.
I think that is interesting. So, I mean, it's one thing to survey them or to email them, but you were actually picking up the phone.
Oh, yeah. And making proactive phone calls. I really went hard on that. I think if you have a brand, it's very important when you have your first 100 customers to figure out what this demographic looks like. And is this repeatable? Like if it's very heavily influenced by your local family and friends, then you know that's not really your target demographic yet. You haven't really figured it out. But once you're, you know, around that 100th customer, those people look like the people you're attracting. So it's important to figure out who these people really are and does it match up with what I thought and how do I need to adjust accordingly.
I love that. I think that is awesome. For sure, for sure. So it's been great. Like, I want you to, we've talked a lot about what you do, but like, kind of like, tell us exactly what you do and how people want to connect with you if they are interested in this.
Yeah, you know what? I'm still on the phone all day, believe it or not. I'm on my phone and email all day. I still meet with prospective clients. When people are interested in starting a beauty brand, I want to have that initial conversation with them and figure out like, what inspired you? What is your goal or what was your ideal outcome from setting up this call with me today, and really talk them through that process. And I don't charge for that, but that's just kind of like a, you know, figuring out where are you at right now? How could we potentially help? Or maybe we're not the best fit. Like where can we, you know, guide you? So I spend a lot of time doing these kind of customer discovery calls every day. And then otherwise I'm here in the facility, kind of like popping in and checking in on the lab, checking in on assembly with the general manager and figuring out like how things are moving, what the metrics look like, what new products we have coming down the pipeline. It's never ending fun, I guess, around here.
Awesome. Now, what is the website? Tell us the website again.
Yes, our website is geniesupply.com.
Okay. And the social media handles as well.
Right. So we are at Genie Supply on TikTok and Genie Supply Inc. on Instagram. And those are our only socials.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll make sure I have all of that information in the show notes. And before we wind up, I have a few quick questions for you. So what is the biggest lesson that you have learned on your entrepreneurial journey thus far?
That's a crazy question. I think the number one thing I've learned is that the best indicator of success for entrepreneurs, because, you know, I've worked with several hundred of them now, is humility. I really mean that. Like, can this person remain humble throughout the process and stay curious? Because inevitably you will face many, many, many challenges, and you really have to have like the grit and resilience to get through it. But also you have to approach each situation with curiosity and humility. So I think that the most important thing I found out is just how important that is, because what you see in media is these kind of cocky entrepreneurs, and that the cocky entrepreneurs are the ones that do the best. But I find that the cocky ones are the ones that fall the fastest. They might soar the highest, but they also fall the fastest. So I think like creating a nice foundation and remaining humble and resilient is very, very important.
I love that. I think that's some great advice, because honestly, I'm more of a down-to-earth, humble type of person. And, you know, some people are very not that, you know, they're like straightforward at you, and they have a lot of success, and that's not my style, right? So you just kind of gave me confirmation right there.
you might think they're successful, but also people that are outwardly not very modest, you know, very cocky, are more likely to share only their successes and not their failures. So perhaps you're just seeing a projection that they want you to see. So yeah, definitely don't discount your own grind.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Megan. So what is your favorite tool that you use in your business? Like, what, just give us a tool that you think every business owner needs.
So the most versatile, you have to use Google's like dupe of Microsoft everything. No one's paying for that. Sorry, Microsoft, and no one's paying for that, right?
No.
So you have to use that versatile. I think the tool that people don't know how to use is ChatGPT. Like, they just think it's only good for one or two things. You have to have quite a bit of creativity and flexibility, but you know, you can create your own GPTs with your own sets of rules. Like, we have so many individual GPTs that we've trained on our data here that, you know, very useful, very cool. And for keeping stuff straight, Toggle. I think Toggle has been really helpful for project management, and anyone that has a beauty brand with all these kind of like spinning plates or moving parts, you got to get Toggle. Just project manage on Toggle by yourself.
Awesome. Now, you know, the ChatGPT one, I knew there was a lot of ways that you could use it because I'm always finding out new ways to use it. But that's interesting, you know, how you could, you know, train it to work for you. And I've, yep. And I've seen other people have ChatGPT tools that they offer with their the branding and all that in it. And I didn't know how they went about creating that, but I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we have one that's just trained on our lab protocols and standard operating procedures for the labs. We have one that's trained on all of our pricing. So you can ask it like pricing and product questions. And then we have some that are customer specific. So like if a customer has very strict restrictions for what can and can't be in their products, our chemists can run through their custom GPT and ask if these ingredients they're considering using would be allowed under the client's specific restriction sets. Very useful, but, you know, useful for a ton of things. I use it for travel planning. Sometimes I'll run huge data sets through it if, like, I don't feel like doing the math. But you have to check it. It's not infallible. It doesn't always do everything 100% correct. So you still have to know how to solve most of the problems. You're just checking if the answer is right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, Megan. I think that is awesome. I learned a few new things today myself. It's been so great having you as a guest on today. Do you have anything else you want to share with us before we go?
This is going to sound a little nuts, but I get asked all the time, like, do I think someone's idea for a company or idea for a product is good? And it's really an impossible question to answer. But what I tell people is that to start a company or just start anything, you need a healthy amount of audacity. So, of course, I just told you earlier to be humble, but have the audacity. Like, seriously, just go for it. No amount of research that you do is ever going to fully quell your doubts. You're never going to feel like you have enough information. And actually, the more research you do, the more you might turn around and decide not to do something. So I say just go for it.
Awesome. Just go for it. I love that, Megan. Megan Cox, everybody, I'll make sure I have all the information in the show notes. As always, stay great, and we are out. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today. Make sure you subscribe. Check us out on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. I want to hear from you. Email me at info@businessbeautynetwork.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at I Am Brandy Taylor and Facebook at I Am Brandy Taylor. I want to connect with you, so let's stay connected. And remember that all things are possible if you only believe. Stay great.